You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It is 6 minutes after seven now. Hopefully your day is off to a great start. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you're with us. A lot to get to. There is a lot of stuff we need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
All right. I feel like we woke Parker up. Yes.
Un poco.
Former Attorney General Pam Bondi could be charged with contempt of Congress after failing to appear for a scheduled deposition for her testimony in a long-running investigation into the federal government's handling of the Jeffrey Epstein investigation. Bondi was issued a bipartisan subpoena for her testimony to the House Oversight Committee while she was serving as Attorney General. She was scheduled to appear yesterday, but, you know, she got fired last week, and the Justice Department says the subpoena no longer applies. Contempt of Congress is a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail and fines up to $100,000.
Are we ever going to quit hearing about her?
Nope.
Okay.
Not until she finally testifies.
I just wanted to check to see what
she'd
our timeline was.
She would immediately leave the headlines if she went in and testified, and then we'd have no further use for this witness, Your Honor.
It worked for Bill and Hillary Clinton. We haven't heard anything more about their links.
Nope.
In other headlines this morning, stuff you need to know, GOP State Representative Scott Allen announced yesterday he won't seek re-election after losing a bid for Waukesha mayor last week. Allen, who was first elected in 2014, is the 10th member of the assembly to retire or decide to run for another office. Allen said in a statement that he's taking a sabbatical from elected office. The 60-year-old also served as Waukesha alderman from 1998 until 2001. Not only did we see Allen step down yesterday, but Senator Jesse James also decided to not run for re-election. He is now the fifth state Senate member to say that he won't be running for re-election.
Lot of Republicans suddenly want to be with their family and start a new chapter of their lives.
Yeah.
Which leads us to a bigger story, which is why we're moving through the first two so quickly. This is a story that hits close to Jamie's heart. She loves to talk about gerrymandering. She loves to talk about maps. And yesterday, the Republicans in the state legislature said they are leaving the door open, quote, to continue meaningful dialogue with Governor Tony Evers on his call to ban partisan gerrymandering in Wisconsin. But then the governor was like, hey, you can leave the door open, but there's no room for negotiation anyway, because we need to pass this constitutional amendment that I proposed earlier this year, I being the governor. He said, quote, there's nothing to negotiate because there's no room for compromise when it comes to making sure Wisconsinites' voices matter and their votes count. So, Jamie, is there any hope? Why even bother? Is this all theatrics?
Yes. Well, it's always theatrics with this GOP, right? I mean, that's
right.
Just
and
it.
We could draw a timeline and figure out why this is happening.
Yes.
You just read about two.
Yes.
You just talked about two reasons.
I mean, and let's be clear. I think when you look at what happened in Tuesday's election, right? First and foremost, when Governor Evers signed this executive order, when he made the proclamation that he wanted this to happen in a state of the state, I think if you were watching from the outside, you always knew that this special legislative session was a stretch and that there was a pretty good chance it wasn't going to happen based on the previous actions of Speaker Voss gaveling in, gaveling out, saying, sure, we'll come to the table. I think there was always a little hope, though, that maybe even the Republicans could understand where the numbers were, what the maps had done to voters. But then, of course, you lose hope pretty quickly because then you actually get everybody assembled. The Republicans don't show up. Now, I am hearing, and we're going to actually be joined by Brittany Carlone. She's the state government and politics reporter at Wisconsin Watch. She's going to join us at 8:30 this morning to break this down a little bit more and give us the bird's eye view of what's happening at the Capitol. Because I'm also hearing that they are supposed to try to convene another session Thursday of this week because the discussions are going to happen that quickly. I'm not really sure.
Boy, they're wasting no time after that shellacking they got the other day.
I mean, and I think that's just it. The writing is on the wall, I think, especially when you look at what's happening on the national level. You're right. They did get a shellacking. That was a 20-point win for Judge Chris Taylor over the conservative Judge Maria Lazar. And you are seeing what's happening in the national polling. You are seeing the unpopularity of things like tariffs and how that's affecting people's checkbooks at home. You're seeing the effects of polling regarding the Iran war. You're seeing the effects of healthcare, people losing benefits. And the very top of the party, President Trump, is the most unpopular president at this stage of a presidency that we've ever seen. That doesn't really spell success.
Right. And the numbers bear this out. That is, while I agree with your statement, it is not just your opinion.
No, it is
that
not. Is,
the numbers are proving that out. And we've talked about this before. We've talked about it more on a national level than a state level, where if you can't win straight up, you always try to game the system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we see that happening now, where the Republicans think, well, because we control things for the moment, if we get in and get those maps redrawn, which proved to be fairer, not the fairest maps in the last elections, things didn't go completely as they wanted to. So now they're thinking, if they can get in there and get these maps done, then maybe they have a shot come November.
Yeah.
And the governor's not good. He doesn't need to make any changes now.
No.
So I don't see him backing down. So if we know that going in, that both sides are not going to back down, because the Republicans are going to push for going back to how things used to be when the maps were even more unfair, and the governor is going to say, no, we made some progress, not even nearly as much, and we want to make this a permanent thing so that we don't have to go through this every 10 years or every time somebody gets a whim to change the maps. What's the point?
I think here's what did make me hopeful yesterday, and it is the smallest glimmer of hope that you could possibly imagine.
Reach for it.
In other instances like this, where there's been a special session being called, they literally gaveled in, gaveled out, and they didn't even say we want further conversation. They just gaveled in, gaveled out, and went home. There was nothing else. There was absolutely nothing else. So that is my little sliver of hope, that at least they have made the statement that we are not shutting this down. We do want further discussion about this with the governor, with the leadership of the Democrats. Speaker Robin Voss, Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu said that they are leaving this door open. And so I'm going to see that as this small little inkling that maybe they're going to come back to the table. And here's why. Because it all goes back to the people who are also resigning or saying they're not going to run again. Because Senator Jesse James is a perfect example of this. When he announced yesterday that he wouldn't be seeking reelection, I think if you're a Republican, that had to send some shockwaves, because there are four districts considered in play this fall, and Republicans have to win at least two of them to maintain their majority, which was 18-15 to start this season. So with all of the announcements of people not returning or not running for reelection, the margins are slipping further and further. So I think if you're the Republicans, this is just me, my opinion, I think actually going to the table and having those discussions behooves you in some sort of way, right? Because your majority is slipping. And you can say that we want the maps to go back to what they were. People have seen what fairer maps are actually all about now. They like the fact that you have to work. They like the fact that you're actually getting a few things done for the state. And I think it's going to be worse for the party if you allow the maps to fall back to what they were prior to the current maps that they're using right now, which, by the way, those will expire at the end of the year, which is why the governor is pushing for this to happen now.
Right. And while the current maps are not perfect, they are a little more representative of what's going on in the state. It can always be better. And it's, it's a 10-year process, which tied to the census, but it still doesn't make much sense.
Here's the thing: it's never going to be a perfect system, and I think that's the one thing that people have to understand. Whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, it's never going to be a perfect system. But the maps that we have right now that narrowed the margins in the Capitol for the Democrats, right? It is much better than it was, and it will never be perfect. You are never going to be 100% happy with what it's going to look like, because that is bipartisanship, and that is what the negotiation process should be, and that's what it should look like. Both sides should be able to say at the end of the day, hey, we gave up some things, we got some things, but it looks better for our constituents doing it this way.
Well, and that, yes. And the problem is when you look at a map, a districting map, and you see how
so
crazy
confusing.
The lines are, and you're like, hold on, what, you know, it doesn't take a cartographer or a political expert or anybody to look at this map and go, something's screwy here. Why does this district all of a sudden go from a nice, you know, oval-shaped district,
yeah,
and then have a long ancillary piece that comes out along one road, and then it juts up into a neighborhood, and then it comes back. It's like, no.
Here's the other thing I would say, and I think this is a point that's maybe getting missed a little bit. If you're the Republicans, I want to go to the table, and I want to negotiate this out, because I don't want it to end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, where it is now a liberal majority of 5-2. So if I'm the Republicans and I'm serious, I'm getting my behind in a chair in the governor's office and his team and the leadership of the Democrats, and I'm figuring out a plan that works for both parties, because you're probably not going to do so well when you go in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court with that majority now.
Right, but I am not comfortable with the fact that this could anything's going to happen. Because if I'm a Republican, I'm looking at the map now, and I'm not happy with the way the map looks now.
Right.
And so I'm not going to say, yes, let's codify this map, and this is the map going forward. It's in the Constitution, and then it'd take 2/3 majority to make any kind of constitutional change. So I'm not going to give up with that. And the governor is not going to cede any ground on taking this map and making it permanent. Now, in the past, the gamble would be on the Republican side, well, we'll wait till after the elections, we'll be in good shape, and then we can change the map again at the end of the year. But as you said, the writing is on the wall. You've got a lot of defections or retirements, however you want to paint these. Suddenly, the Republicans don't have that luxury of time and that luxury of the guaranteed majority. So who's gonna blink? And what would either side gain by blinking?
And I think those are the questions. And I wish I could answer all of them. I think that
maybe Brittany will answer them.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping Brittany's got some more insight when she joins
or
us
maybe
at 8:30 this morning.
The governor could answer it.
The
or
governor
Robin
could.
Voss.
And I'll be honest.
They're welcome to join us.
We're also going to be joined by Wisconsin Democratic Party Chair Devin Remiker later this week, where we're going to talk about this Supreme Court. We're going to get into all of it. So you can guarantee that this is one of the biggest political fights happening in the state of Wisconsin right now. Because both sides, as you rightly pointed out, aren't going to blink. And I think the voters are kind of tired of talking about it. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Voters are tired of talking about fair maps. They're tired of hearing the word gerrymandering. We just want to be able to know that our vote counts when we get
voters
to the polls.
Voters would like to talk about anything else for a day. Maybe just a day.
Right. Agreed. You know?
Well, speaking of that, how about a little pop culture? How about a little swiper stay? That'll take our minds off gerrymandering and jillymandering and all the other manderings, the meanderings. This is Daybreak
Seven
on the Civic Media Network. Oh, sorry, I had a dramatic pause.
It's okay.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
7:22 right now. Hopefully you are having a great start to your Wednesday morning. It is time for Swipe or Stay, where we leave the politics behind for just a few minutes and we talk about pop culture. Our senior producer, Frank, joins us. How are you today?
I'm hanging in there, but I will say
got a tummy
it always
ache.
I've got a tummy ache, and the air conditioning's not really working here, and I have like 1 hour of sleep. But other than that, I'm doing
problems.
I know. Other than that, I'm great. Whenever I can leave Brian speechless right before a break, or if he has a lot to say but he can't
mostly speechless. There is always more to say. This is why you got to watch the stream. Treat yourself one day and just watch the stream, even if you normally listen on the radio or Spotify or your phone or wherever. Wherever you watch it, watch the stream because,
we have some interesting conversations.
we really do. And we're about to have even more interesting conversations.
All right, let's do this.
With Swiper's Stay. I'm going to read some pop culture headlines. Brian and Jamie are going to have to decide whether they want to stay or swipe on to the next one. Parker will be the tiebreaker if we get there. So we're going to move on to story number one, and this may be the last or one of the last updates we have on this one. But we have a Diana Rossini, Mike Vrabel update. Do we want it?
I think we have.
Well, you said it's
going to
be it could be the last one.
It could be the last one.
So I will stay only to end this saga.
I think we have to have it stay.
Closure.
So Diana Rossini has officially resigned.
Wow.
Resigned.
Has Vrabel
from
resigned?
The Athletic. He has not.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
So we do. She actually posted the entire letter that she put in. She said, "Please accept this letter as my resignation from The Athletic, effective immediately. You and I have already publicly addressed the recent attacks against me, and I have nothing to add publicly to what we have said. I've covered the NFL with professionalism and dedication throughout my career." All this stuff. She goes on to say, "The Athletic supported me unequivocally and expressed confidence in my work and pride in my journalism, and for that I am grateful. However, in the days that followed, unfortunately, commentators and various media have engaged in self-feeding speculation that is simply unmoored from the facts."
Wow, unmoored from the facts.
Unmoored. She went full journalist. She's breaking out all the words.
I love it.
You know, the next headlines we're going to see is Diana Rossini and husband split, or Mike Vrabel and wife split.
Well, that's why I say it's one of the last stories, because if either of those two things happen, you better believe we have to talk about it.
They're going to try.
If she births a Vrabel baby, let us know.
But here's the interesting part. The executive editor for The Athletic said, they supported her in everything that she was saying, and then additional information emerged.
Oh.
And that launched the investigation. So we've yet to
see
what that extra stuff is. And, I saw Dave Portnoy, the founder of Barstool Sports. I know he's a pompous talking head for the most part, but he did make a good point where he said, usually it's a weird resignation letter, because if you're under investigation and you have nothing to hide, you go, "Yep, go ahead, look into it. I'm riding this one out, and I'm going to be right."
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not what she said.
That's not what she said.
No.
She doesn't want to give this any more steam, so she's just going to lose her dream job. Going to walk away.
Okay.
So my question to both of you is, how long before we get a Diana Rossini podcast?
Monday.
Yeah, I was going to say within the next week or so, for sure.
100%.
Yeah, she's 100%. Not wasting any time.
No.
And she's got contacts. She can make it happen fast.
Yep. She'll be fine. Moving on. Controversial artist cancels upcoming concert in Europe.
Swipe.
Milwaukee head coach has beef with famous NBA reporter.
Oh, let's go.
We have to stay.
Parker, I know you're excited about this one. Oh, yeah. So the beef between ESPN's Shams Charania and Bucks head coach Doc Rivers continues. Rivers referred to Charania as emotional a few days ago and said he was the recipient of a revenge article.
Wow.
Well, Charania went on the Pat McAfee show on ESPN the other day and said, quote, "If the Bucks spent as much time dealing with their own internal problems as they did responding to accurate reports, they wouldn't be in the mess that they're in right now."
Ooh. Wow.
Gauntlet thrown.
Okay. Wow.
I'm just here to document and cover it the right way.
Holy smokes. All right.
Parker, how bad is the Bucks situation coming from a fan standpoint?
Probably not good.
Not good.
Don't feel great.
Probably not good.
Yeah. Doc resigning / retiring / probably getting fired, sort of, kind of. And Giannis probably gone.
I still feel it's interesting because Doc Rivers was Giannis's pick.
Yeah.
As a head coach. Yeah. That's who Giannis wanted. They went out and got him specifically for Giannis. If the sham reports are true, based off this.
I know.
Not winning will do a lot of things.
I was going to say, everything's hunky-dory when you're winning.
I get it. They didn't really win under Doc Rivers.
No. Wow, shocker. Foot, how much time do we have, Parker? We have time for one more?
Oh, we have one more, about a minute.
Okay, Food Network star is in hot water.
Good. Stay.
Good.
Guy Fieri was caught on camera shaking Andrew Tate's hand at UFC 327 over the weekend.
But this isn't the first time he's done something like this. There was
it's
another
the first
incident.
Time. It's the first time shaking his hand and being seen with him. But no, if you've looked at Fieri closely and his allegiances.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's very much more skewed right.
Yes.
He was getting roasted on social media and said, I'm seeing all of your comments about the photo, and all I can say is that I'm devastated. He goes on to say, basically, he didn't know who he was shaking hands with.
Stop.
That's such a cop-out.
Stop. Go back to Flavortown and shut up.
Such a cop-out.
And your
my
highlighted
goodness.
Tips.
And if you don't know who the Tate brothers are, go look them up.
Yeah. Or
that's
don't.
Wiper say.
Or don't.
When we come back, Missy Hughes joins us.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 7:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your Wednesday morning. Happy tax day, by the way. If you haven't filed those taxes, you better get on top of it. They're due at midnight tonight. If you are listening this morning in Richland Center on WRCE or in La Crosse on WLCX, Hayward on WBZH, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. You know Wisconsin will elect a new governor this November, and while the Republicans appear to have their candidate in place, Democrats have a crowded field of seven candidates set to take part in the August 11th primary. One of those candidates is Missy Hughes. She served as the secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation from 2019 until 2025. She was appointed in 2019 by Governor Evers. She's the first woman to hold that post. Missy joins us now to share some of the details of her campaign. Missy, thanks for being here. We appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you because we like when candidates have plans. And one of the top issues for Wisconsinites and people across this country are access to and the high cost of health care. So last month, you released a 10-point plan that you would hope to institute if elected governor. Can you share some of the highlights of that plan with us?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Brian. Everywhere I go, folks are talking about the costs of healthcare, the challenges around healthcare. It's so complicated, and that's why I needed to have a 10-point plan because I really wanted to have a 360-degree view of how we were going to approach and try to solve some of the problems. So I'm really focused on costs, access, and quality. So first off, you know, we all know that the costs are really overwhelming when it comes to premiums and when it comes to the deductibles that hang over many of our heads, you know, just waiting for that boot to drop. So I am proposing a public option that would be using our Badger Care infrastructure. We would expand Badger Care so that every Wisconsinite has the opportunity to buy into that and to be able to afford that. We'd also increase the opportunities for low-income folks to be able to participate in Badger Care. The goal is making sure that everyone has access to affordable health care. The second piece of my plan really focuses on reducing costs around prescription drugs and what insurance companies are doing to folks. So we'd put caps on prescription drugs that are chronic, you know, insulin, those things that folks need day in, day out, but also think about importing drugs from Canada. We're seeing many states that are taking that up because it's just the best way to lower costs for our citizens. We're also really thinking about access and making sure that we have enough providers all around the state. I live in rural Wisconsin. We have challenges where you have to drive for an hour for simple surgeries or for OBGYN care. We need to solve that. We also have a real crisis around EMT and emergency services around the state. So digging in and making sure that we've got providers. We all know that in every part of the state, we need more mental health care providers, especially in our schools and in our hospitals. And then finally, the thing that I'm most excited about is the quality part of my plan, because there's incredible research happening in Wisconsin at UW-Madison, at the Medical College of Wisconsin, with some of our great companies like GE Healthcare and Accuray, about really changing the game when it comes to the providing of healthcare and making sure that people get in and out of the healthcare system as quickly as possible and back to their families.
Missy, you've also talked, I was doing a little reading on your plan, and you've talked about protecting access to things like vaccines and care as part of that preventative medicine. What concerns are you seeing right now, or do you have as you work that into your plan because of what's happening on the federal level?
Well, you know, what I saw during COVID, I served in Governor Zeber's administration during COVID, was a complete decimation of our public health system. And that has continued with RFK and Donald Trump. They have just, you know, decimated the ability to know what vaccines you should get, to make sure that you're doing what you can for your family, to protect your family around vaccines. My mom was an allergist and immunologist. And from the very youngest age, she taught me how important vaccines were and how they were part of what we do for each other and taking care of each other. And so to see what's happening around vaccines and just around, you know, the discarding of good science and knowing, you know, that we need to use science to lead our decisions is really something we absolutely have to reverse. And we have the ability to in Wisconsin. We have a great public health system. We have folks who want to participate in that system. We need to lift them up, protect them, and say thank you for taking care of us.
Missy, let's go back to something you said about the rural areas of the state. And we've talked about this a lot, how the medical care, access to medical care in those rural areas has dropped. It's doctors are leaving. Some places, the hospitals are closing because of funding. So getting more care there is obviously a priority. But how do you exactly do it when the hospitals weren't making money, allegedly, and that's why they closed? When you're losing doctors to the area, what can you do to bring these services back to those areas that need them?
Well, I'll just say, you know, in my community in Southwest Wisconsin, I served on the board of our local hospital, and the challenges around bringing providers to our rural areas is a big thing. We need to make sure that we've got childcare, that we've got housing, these fundamental pieces that folks are looking for when they're looking to create a life in a rural community. You know, you need to be able to have those services available. And so that's the first key part. And then you need to make sure that the rural providers have the access to the facilities that they need, the training that they need. But we're seeing really innovative things in rural Wisconsin. We're seeing a really innovative cooperative start in Chippewa Falls after we saw the hospital closing there. We're seeing opportunities for clinics, for mobile clinics, and for telehealth. And we just need to, you know, it needs to be an all-in approach to making sure that as providers are willing to come to our rural areas, we've got the support system around them to be able to keep them there and have them have thriving livelihoods.
We're talking with Missy Hughes. She is the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, one of the candidates, I should say. MissyForGovernor.com if you want to check out more about her plans. Your experience is very unique in the fact that you also ran the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and you've talked about this Wisconsin idea. What is that, first of all, and how do you turn that research at places like the University of Wisconsin into real healthcare solutions for the state?
Well, the Wisconsin idea is so deep in our DNA. Sometimes we even, you know, forget about it and don't elevate it as much as we can. And what I've seen in the healthcare biohealth industry that we have in Wisconsin is the opportunity for collaboration between the government, the university, the industry. And that's what the Wisconsin idea is. It's finding practical solutions, bringing those solutions to the communities, and then getting feedback and taking it back and doing better. So we were able to get the Biden administration to designate Wisconsin as a regional tech hub for the biohealth industry. And just doing that has spurred incredible collaboration between the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the Medical College of Wisconsin, our industry, and our government in order to really move forward personalized care that can help folks be able to get exactly the care that they need rather than having the kitchen sink thrown at them and be able to get back to their families and their work as quickly as possible. And it's really groundbreaking, exciting research, and we need to support that, but it has to get, the Wisconsin idea is getting that research from the lab on campus to the hospital room, back to the lab, and all through that process. And I'm so excited to see that. And I think there are so many opportunities for the Wisconsin idea to spur more innovation across the state in agriculture, in manufacturing, with AI, all of these different new technologies that we're facing. We know how to take those and make them really practical for Wisconsin.
Missy Hughes is a Democratic candidate for governor. You can go to missyforgovernor.com. Healthcare, a huge concern. The economy, another big concern. Now, in your former position with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, you created jobs, you helped assist small businesses, brought a lot of investment to the states. And one of your campaign platforms is to create a Main Street economy. What does that mean exactly, and how do you achieve it?
Well, what I'm really seeing is Wisconsinites are stuck in many different ways. Healthcare is a way that they are stuck. Student loan debt is a way that they're stuck. Not thinking they're ever going to be able to buy a house is a way that they're stuck. So my plan really drives to address those things. First, I want to create 50,000 new businesses. What we saw coming out of COVID is that Wisconsinites have great ideas, they're passionate, and they want to be independent and lead their own lives. And so we want to support them and have their back as they're starting new businesses. I want to build 200,000 homes because we are definitely facing a housing crisis. And that's keeping people from being able to build wealth by owning their own home. Finally, I want to train 100,000 more Wisconsinites every year because we see Wisconsinites really struggling with having, you know, 2-3 jobs, but still not being able to make ends meet. By using our incredible technical college system, we'll be able to get folks more training. And as we looked into it, we could see that we could increase people's annual salaries by up to $45,000 a year just by getting them some more training and getting them into the high-skilled jobs that I know our businesses need.
Missy, I also want to kind of dive in quickly a little bit to the political landscape that we're seeing here in Wisconsin. We just saw that big Wisconsin Supreme Court race, Chris Taylor winning by about 20 points. What does that tell you? Because if you look at polls right now, especially in the gubernatorial race, everything is very neck and neck. But what does that tell you where the voters are right now in when you're laying out plans like this? And how does that affect what you're coming up with as what you would do as governor if you were elected?
Yeah, look, voters are incredibly upset and also engaged. And that's what we saw last Tuesday. We saw that folks are ready for a change. They're ready for not the usual politician. I've never run for office before. As you said, I have kind of a unique combination of private sector experience. I worked for Organic Valley for 17 years, saving family farms, and then did the public work working for economic development. I'm not a politician. I don't have, you know, a long legislative record, and I've just haven't been involved in election after election. Voters are looking for a change. They're looking for a new, fresh ideas and ways to lead the state forward. The truth of the matter is, although it seems overwhelming that there's 7 folks in this race, I believe that the winner of the primary is going to be, you know, the next governor of this state. And so I urge people, and I'm excited to see people getting engaged, learning about all the candidates and deciding who's got the experience, who's had the impact across the state, and who can be able to bring a statewide coalition to beat Tom Tiffany in November.
Speaking of getting to know the candidates, Missy, what's your favorite go-to concession order when you go to a ball game?
Oh, 100% a brat with yellow mustard.
Oh.
Pop or beer?
Oh, beer. Yeah.
Okay. I love she, you didn't even have to think about it. That was like the go-to. That one was great. as we look at the voters who are maybe undecided, Missy, what is the thing about you and your experience that you really want them to know as this race progresses?
I really want them to know that I drive towards getting things done. I want to have a solution. If someone comes into me with a challenge or a problem, I'm pulling from all of my different experience to say, how can we make connections for you? How can we solve this problem? And that's really important to me. As you look at my record, I created jobs, I helped businesses, I saved family farms. I have actual experience on the ground of how to make things happen. I trust people to come to me with, this is a priority. This is something we need to fix. If we can fix this, we can start to move forward. And I want to help them get those things done. It's really just all about solutions and getting things done. It's incredibly important to me. It is not just promises and words. It's making an actual change in folks' lives.
Missy, we got about 30 seconds. You have the resume. You have the plans. What's one thing about Missy Hughes, the person, not Missy Hughes, the candidate, that you would like people to know before we leave?
Oh, well, I'm a mom of three. I had twins and then a third. I had three under the age of two. We have been busy over our lives raising our family in southwestern Wisconsin. I love being outdoors. We live in a place where we have 70 sheep and two donkeys, and I'm just so excited about Wisconsin and its
Very
future.
Nice. Missy Hughes is a Democratic candidate for governor. MissyForGovernor.com is the website. Missy, thanks for joining us this morning. Thanks for the information. We appreciate it.
Thank you all so much. This is so
amazing. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We always appreciate it. Hey, just a quick reminder that if you want to follow along the show or anything we're doing or anything we're not doing on the show, check out our social media pages. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can give us a follow. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. Our followers keep going up over on Facebook. I'm not as enthralled as I was because we reached 100. No. And now I'm just waiting for the day we can actually stream over there. But we would love to get even more followers.
To be honest anymore, I don't follow how many followers we're getting and stuff. I'm glad people are listening. I want people to go there and do it, but I don't have the bandwidth now to be counting followers like I did back in the day. Oh, I got another follower. But we're glad. We appreciate.
Yes.
That does not mean I don't appreciate you following and listening and viewing and all of that. I do. And know that I just assume that you're all smart enough to say,
why wouldn't we
want to follow that? So I'm giving you the benefit
of
the doubt.
We're on at a time of the day when people are busy. I feel like we need to give those little reminders. Trying to get to
school
and work and business.
I'm not against reminding. I won't be keeping track.
I just
assume you're there.
I just wanted 100 because I knew that there were several pieces that had to fall into place, and now we're almost there. And is it next week we can start streaming on our shiny new page?
I think a week from today.
Okay.
Oh my God. All right.
It's exciting stuff. Look at us making progress.
I downplay it to temper my disappointments when things don't go well. Speaking of that, speaking of being disappointed, if you're listening on WMDX here at Madison, you know that in about 6 minutes you go away because Stephanie Miller comes up.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you have to stop listening to us.
No.
You can follow us on the Facebook page. You can follow the Civic Media Facebook page. You can follow us on the Civic Media app, of course, and you can keep listening to the show.
Yes.
So we hope you do that. So the Dreamers Act, DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, whatever you call it, you know it was adopted in 2012 under President Obama. It provides temporary protection from deportation and work authorization to certain undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children. The program does not provide recipients with legal status, a path to permanent residency, or citizenship. But now, in Wisconsin, some of these people will be able to get occupational licenses because Wisconsin will officially now allow those status holders to get those occupational licenses under a bill that Governor Evers signed into law last week. AB 759, now 2025 Wisconsin Act 240. For those of you with a scorecard at home and you want to keep track of all your legislative numbers and stats.
That's even too much for me.
Well, it allows DACA holders to apply for and obtain professional credentials from the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. The governor said in a statement that it was the right thing to do to help dreamers pursue their higher education and career goals, to give back to the communities that raised them, and to help the Wisconsin economy by ensuring smart, talented, and capable people can join our workforce in high-need areas. How do you argue with that?
I don't think you can. Doesn't this just make sense? This just makes sense on so many levels. DACA recipients, for the most part, have grown up here. They've gone to school here. Mm-hmm. They lived here most of their lives. I know.
But their parents, did their parents come in legally?
And until this law, they couldn't even get a professional license. So they could go to school, they could do everything right, and they were still being blocked from becoming a nurse, a plumber, an EMT, a cosmetologist. Jobs that, I don't know, we kind of need filled, not only in the state, but in the country right now. And so I think this just gives people a chance to use that education to build a career, contribute to their communities in ways that they've already been doing for years, and still mm-hmm. be able to make money doing so. I don't know why this had to be some big legal, some big bill. I get it. But it just didn't make sense to me.
To argue about immigration. We have to make everything about the immigration.
It's not about immigration.
Well, it's not, technically.
It's about
job creation. It's about citizens of this country, people who were not granted citizenship, but people who were grandfathered in. Because of DACA. You want people to stay, because one of the things we hear so much, right, when people are arguing about undocumented immigrants, what a drain they are on society and how they don't pay taxes, even though it's been shown most of them do. but now you've got people who could be making good livings with professional careers. Those people are paying more taxes. Those people are then spending more money in your community, in the communities where they grew up, in the communities they don't want to leave, because this Wisconsin is now their home. So not allowing them to have these certificates was just a way of, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy on the point of the critics who were going to say, well, look at these people, they're a drain. Well, then let them get a professional job that they've trained for, that they went,
no,
well, that wouldn't be right.
We can't do that. Now, we've got about 5,000 DACA recipients in the state of Wisconsin, so let's let them participate. So I'm glad that Governor Evers signed this bill. I'm glad that there was bipartisan support. And let's be clear, this isn't going to change anything on the federal level. Not every state is going to be participating in this program. It's also not giving DACA recipients citizenship. It's not going to change.
And it's not taking these certificates away from anybody else.
Right.
It's not one or the other.
Right.
There's a lot of these certificates. Unlimited.
They're
trained, be ready. If you pass, you pass.
This simply gives people with legal work authorization the ability to be licensed, do jobs. And I don't know, at the end of the day, I think it's really hard to argue with the growth of local economy. I mean, I think it really is. And that's essentially what this is going to do, is it's going to grow so many of these local economies and these communities. And you think about the fact that some of these DACA recipients could now get a license to be a plumber, and maybe you have a new business popping up in your town where it might be needed, right? I don't know why these conversations have to become hard.
They're going to have to buy some trucks. They're going to have to buy more tools at the Home Depot.
Weird how that works.
A lot of things feed into it. But, you know, there's a, but what about? No, stop the what about. And again, you brought this up, and it's a good point to leave it on, that it was bipartisan. So this is our legislators looking at the problem and saying, yeah, you know what? This is going to help everybody.
Yeah.
So
credit where credit's due. Sometimes it's hard, but credit where credit's due.
All right. When we come back, it's headlines. We got a lot to get to and very little time to do it. If you're listening on WMDX, talk to you later. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martz at 7:59 on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app,
you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.